6-1-3 Wrestling. With your hosts, Kyle Joseph and Mark Cote.
Hey everyone, this is Kyle here from 613 Wrestling, the podcast by fans, for fans, about wrestling. It is just me alone in the studio today, but have no fear, Mark will be joining later on in the show. Just couldn't get things to connect, but that's the way life goes. So on this week's episode, we are going to break down the Clash of Champions pay-per-view coming this Sunday. As well, we will... I mean Mark, we'll give our thoughts and opinions on Raw and SmackDown, the King of the Ring, and how that's fallen into place, and anything else we want to talk about. So stay tuned. After the break, I'll be back to share my thoughts and ideas, and then Mark will take over for the second half of the show. Stay tuned. Hey everyone, thanks very much for hanging in there. Once again, this is Kyle here in the 613 studio. Gonna give my breakdown of the last week's events, including Raw and SmackDown, also talk about King of the Ring. And then after the next break, I will go into my Clash of Champions predictions. So that being said, let's start off with our Raw. Started off, obviously, with a hot segment with Stone Cold. The crowd loved it. It's been however long it was before he'd come back. I thought he put on a great segment. He commanded the audience. He commanded the ring. And what's funny, though, is I actually thought that AJ Styles' impression of him was pretty bang on in terms of getting the voice and the accent down right. And I think that what was really nice to see is that Stone Cold really seemed to enjoy himself, which was nice because I know that he is here and there and everywhere now. And it's nice to be able to see him be able to have some fun in the ring in a much more controlled and positive light. You know, he didn't have to do too much, didn't take any bumps, and wasn't forced to say anything too ridiculous. I will say at the end of Raw, the beer thing wasn't really my favorite, but it was really to play to the crowd, so I'll let Mark win this one in bringing him back. So, again, we're kind of... I won't get into the Clash of Champions stuff quite yet, but I wasn't really digging the 10-man tag. I don't really like when they mash everybody together and just put them in a match for no reason. But it's certainly, at least Raw versus SmackDown, seemed to have everything a lot more in control in terms of what was going on. And so we had some solid matches in there. Rey Mysterio winning and Natalya winning. You know, they don't really matter too much to anything going on. Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch defeating Bayley and Sasha. Touch briefly on Bayley. I'm all okay. I'm very okay with her siding with Sasha and kind of playing that heel. I just think she needs to change her look to go with it. She clearly has shown that she can be a little edgier, which is about time, but I do think that she needs to look a little edgier than still be the same Bayley who loves hugs but then hits people with chairs. While I was watching this match, which I enjoyed quite a bit, I had to get to thinking that is there a chance for a long build up to Horsewomen versus Horsewomen? We finally get all four Horsewomen of wrestling, not of UFC, of wrestling in the ring together. It's been a long time coming. So, you know, it's unfortunate that Ronda isn't really coming back anytime soon, but this would have been the perfect, I think, opportunity to slowly start to give us our horsewoman versus horsewoman match. And I think probably the most ridiculous thing of the night was Boston Celtics center Enes Kanter, who used to play in New York, trying to play this heel type role and winning the 24/7 belt, which was painful to witness through the Raw replay. It obviously was on Main Event. Every time I think the 24/7's got something good going, they come up with other stuff. And I get they're trying to make it more mainstream. It's the way their introduction into Fox and things like that. But in the end, it's just, it still doesn't do anything for me. There's better segments they could have done with this belt. And there we go. So the other thing for Raw that I want to touch on was the Firefly Funhouse. Again, I really enjoy these episodes. I do wish there was more of a struggle between Bray and the Fiend, as to, you know, trying to control everything. But I did like they brought in Stone Cold with everything and the clock and everything, and then they smashed it with the hammer. And in looking at it, 11:19 was the time it was sent, unknown. But I kind of think maybe it's a lead into Survivor Series. You know, if I look at a calendar, let's see here. I mean, 11:19 is a Tuesday. It might be a bit of a stretch, but it just seemed in my head to kind of make sense. Otherwise, you know, what would be the significance of it? But, yeah, so that's where we were with Raw. I thought Raw was a solid week compared to SmackDown. SmackDown seemed like a smash together, let's do some random things. And I am concerned, and I'm really disliking their go-home shows and leading up to the pay-per-views, because I feel like they're still leaving question marks about matches going into the pay-per-view, when really, by the end of the show, we should know who all the matches are, what the backstory is for everything, and be able to come up with our own conclusions as to who we think is going to win and what do we think is going to happen. But we're not 100% convinced. I mean, Wikipedia is talking about having AJ and... oh my goodness, I'm drawing a blank. This is terrible, I apologize. Cedric Alexander in the US title match. WWE.com has already tracked it, listed it in there, but I don't really recall them actually specifically calling for this match. But I really thought that SmackDown was going to close up some stories, and I just didn't really feel like it was there. I will get to the opening of the show after, as Mark is definitely not going to agree with me on this one. But, again, we're so blessed to have more Shane McMahon on the screen and clearly inserting himself into another tournament, which is just so unbelievably painful. But I'll talk about those matches in a second. You know, Kofi-Randy story is intriguing to me, and I think it's worthwhile watching. It's definitely an interesting thing. Mandy Rose, I'm not a fan of. I know people think that she's this very attractive woman, and I just don't feel like it's enough. I feel like, realistically speaking, we should be focusing more on the desire of Fire and Desire, I think is how that works. I think Mandy's the fire and Sonya's the desire, but I think Sonya really has a chance to really be something in WWE, and I wish they would do more with her. I think she has much better in-ring work than Mandy, and I think that she could really do something well. LGBT stuff aside, because that's definitely a bonus in terms of he really wanted to push the story in that direction. But in the end, I just feel like they're focusing on the wrong person. Eric Rowan's in-ring promo was okay. I don't know. I'm not a fan of Eric Rowan. I feel like he's kind of run his course now again and doesn't really offer anything different. So we'll see how this match goes. I'm interested to see what Daniel Bryan does in terms of his involvement, if anything. I will say I did enjoy The Miz and Andrade. I do enjoy those two in the ring, and I'd be happy to see Andrade anytime. Wasn't really a big fan. I kind of called myself, obviously there's nobody watching with me, but I called to myself that The Miz was going to throw Andrade into Shinsuke. Unfortunately, I think it's an overly used spot there. If anytime you have somebody in that guest announcement chair, someone's getting thrown in. So I think there's an opportunity there to do something different. But we'll get to the kickoff show, and The Undertaker comes, and it was like 13 or 14 minutes for that segment to end. And the whole time I couldn't stop thinking that, and this is where Mark is really going to not be happy with me, that Undertaker is like a senile old grandfather, and everybody else just amuses him by letting him say what he wants and does what he wants. Start rambling on about opportunities to see him in the ring and whatever else he was going on about, and then Sami Zayn interrupts him and really speaks how I feel, and that he should just leave the ring. And then he chokeslam him, but it took him forever to get out of the ring. And I just, again, there is better uses of that time on television, maybe to push some of the Clash of Champions stories, than Old Man Undertaker going and saying whatever he's saying. And I just, with him, he's the Phenom, but he was the Phenom, and it's feel like it's people just holding on to that memory of what Undertaker used to be instead of cluing into what he is now, and maybe just not keeping him on television and really using that space for somebody else. It's the same thing with Goldberg. Ultimately, Goldberg's terrible. End of story. And there's better people to put in matches than these guys. And I mean, if you compare The Undertaker's appearance versus Stone Cold, Stone Cold was on fire. He had the crowd with him. Everything he said made sense, and he was involved. And The Undertaker just, I don't even think he remembered what he said when he got out of the ring. But that obviously is my opinion, and I know Mark will share a different opinion on that one. And then lastly, let's get to some King of the Ring. So on Raw, we had a first time ever triple threat King of the Ring semifinal. We had Ricochet, we had Samoa Joe, and Baron Corbin. I actually thought initially Ricochet was going to win because it just seemed like that's where they were plugging with him. But I will tell you, I'm on board with Baron winning. I think there is ultimately no better heel in WWE right now. There is not a single person that likes Baron Corbin. And that's perfect. And him winning, and winning in a way that makes sense. And, you know, the sneaky pin, and he didn't have to cheat his way or anything like that. It all made sense to me. And so I'm okay with it. I really am. I am concerned what happens if he does win King of the Ring, and ultimately what they're doing with this whole King of the Ring, who knows, as it's not even going to be settled on Clash of Champions. It's settled on the next on Raw, so it seems kind of lackluster. But the other side of this match, we had Chad Gable, and it was announced before the show that Elias broke his ankle, and so he wasn't going to be able to participate. I thought that maybe they would insert, I guess it must have been Ali, who fought against, I think it was Ali. Well, let's, you know what? Power of the internet will tell me who it was. All right, let's see who we had here. Yeah, Elias defeating Ali. So I thought maybe we would insert Ali in there, and I think that would have been a really good match with Chad Gable. I don't like the way they're presenting Chad Gable. I think it's unfortunate because up until now, Chad Gable was, yes, he may be small, but he was never that small. He was never that small in the ring. And they really, I don't know if it's the haircut or the camera angles, but they're really shrinking him down. And he's so good in the ring that it's unfortunate that he really won't get that push again that he was in the potential for. And you know, my hope is that at some point in time, maybe Jason Jordan will make a comeback. And if that's the case, it would be really nice to see him back and the two of them reunite for, you know, American Alpha Phase 2 or you know, the revival of American Alpha, to maybe face off against the revival. Because I think that's a better spot for the both of them. I think those tag team work great. And I just find that Chad Gable's getting booked, like, you know, not very good. And then we had Shane McMahon, who decided to again insert himself. Thankfully, with Kevin Owens, they managed to get Chad Gable through, and then Kevin Owens gets fired, and again, it's another storyline that just won't die, and no one seems to really care about it, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong. You can tell me if I'm wrong. But in the end, I don't need this. We don't need Shane. You don't need Shane. Nobody needs Shane. Kevin Owens should be somewhere. Maybe he'll make some appearances on NXT. That would be fun. But as for who's going to come out on top, I feel like Baron Corbin's going to beat Chad Gable. Or they're going to give it to Chad Gable and they're going to bury him like they did the last couple of King of the Rings. Who knows? But I guess we won't have to wait too long. It's going to be next Monday on Raw. The finals of King of the Ring. And be interested to see how they break this down. So after the break, I will come back after resting my throat for a moment and break down Clash of Champions taking place this Sunday. So please hang tight. She'll never fall in love. She'll never fall in love. A dude was approaching, chick was swagger. He danced with the moves like he was Jagger. Papa was around us now. It's not her fault, she's all alone. She's all alone. Trust issues, that's where the drizzy. Ain't got time for guys, she too busy. Spinning there. Welcome back. Thank you again for joining me. This is Kyle here once again in the 613 Wrestling Studio. Mark will be joining in after the break, or rather will be taking over after the break. So now it's time for my Clash of Champions predictions, and this will be in no particular match order. It's whatever Wikipedia numbers them from 1 through currently 11. We have not really discussed the 24/7, but that will definitely be somewhere in the mix. Obviously, some of these shows will take place on the pre-show. Or sorry, some of these matches will take place on the pre-show. I'm just taking a little gander here. I can't imagine the Cruiserweight won't. And I'm thinking also the women's tag team. That's my prediction for what's going to be on the pre-show. That being said, Clash of Champions takes place 3 days from now, September 15th, well, it'll be 3 days, but when you guys listen to this, taking place in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Spectrum Center. One thing to note, it looks like, in my last segment I talked about King of Ring being, taking place on Raw, the final on Raw. I guess it was originally scheduled for Clash of Champions, but they probably clued in that there was already enough show matches, or you know, something else came up. So that being said, let's break it down. Let's start from the bottom. So up first, as previously mentioned, this supposed AJ Styles versus Cedric Alexander for the United States Championship. I have to think that AJ is not going to lose this one. The OC is going to get involved. I actually was surprised that they didn't insert him into the triple and make it a triple threat for the Universal Championship. I really thought with the way the segment was going on Monday that that's what they were going to lean to, but alas, they didn't. So I feel like again AJ is going to carry through. If he's supposed to be, you know, this guy who makes the place what it is and things like that, at this stage he still needs his belts. Because he's not currently competing for the Universal Championship, so I feel like he does need a belt with him. My hope is that at some point in time, the other two, Anderson and Gallows, will get a chance to get their belt back, and maybe we'll see what goes on from there. Up next, we have Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross defending their Women's Tag Team Championship against Fire and Desire, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. You know, this one's an interesting one. I think Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross have done a lot of good for the tag team championship for women. Way better than the Iconics, unfortunately, and obviously Bayley and Sasha, who didn't really pan out. But I still feel like Alexa Bliss at some point in time has got to turn on Nikki, because Alexa Bliss is a better as a heel, and I think it's an opportunity then for Nikki to turn on and go back to crazy Nikki, which I think works out really well. I think they will retain. I think they're the best option right now to maintain this belt if they want this belt to mean anything at all. That's where things need to go. Alright, up next we have Roman Reigns versus Eric Rowan in a no disqualification match. Some sort of grudge match. We haven't really, I couldn't even listen to Eric Rowan. I'm not going to lie, I had to skip through his monologue. It's not a storyline I care about. I don't think it was done very well. I thought that other than the car segment, the rest of it was really weak and lackluster. It didn't really have the big surprise or big lead-in that people were hoping. Roman's going to win this match. There's no way that Eric beats him in this. Like I said in the previous segment, I wonder what involvement Daniel Bryan's going to have. Is this really a split between the two of them, or what are we going to see? So only time will tell, but I think Roman Reigns comes out on top. I just can't see anything otherwise. Up next, we have Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks for the Raw Women's Championship. This is a match I didn't want to see yet. Giving a lot of thought, I thought that Sasha returning and attacking Becky was a great point. We had Sasha taking on Natalya, and I thought that this is where that match should have gone, and then we would get into the next pay-per-view, which is Hell in a Cell, and I think that would have been a great opportunity to then have Sasha and Becky again in a Hell in a Cell, give Sasha a chance to redo the not-so-good Hell in a Cell match she had with Charlotte. I think it would have pushed the two of them along better. They've done a good job. I want more time. I want more build-up for this, because after this match, where do we go from here? How do we lead into anything? I think Becky retains. I think she has to keep it. She is still the number one draw, and she needs the belt, in my opinion, because it shows that she's the man. She's the best, and the belt is what signifies that. Up next, we have Shinsuke Nakamura versus The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. If The Miz wins, he will, I believe, tie the record for the most times having the championship, which it'll be 9, I believe, which is a record owned by one Chris Jericho. The Miz has been the best thing for the Intercontinental Championship in a long time. I thought this would have been his opportunity at some point in time to start going for more lucrative belts or championships. I think Shinsuke is going to take the win. I think that Sami Zayn is going to cause The Miz to lose, and this will kind of push things forward again. Maybe we'll see another rematch at Hell in the Cell or at some point in time in the coming weeks on either Raw or SmackDown. Can't keep track of who goes on whose show. Speaking of SmackDown, we have the SmackDown Tag Team Championship. Two of the best tag teams that currently exist in the WWE. The New Day with Big E and Xavier Woods taking on the Revival. Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder. I think this is going to be a really good match. I think these two teams really complement each other well, especially with the introduction of the FTRKO, which I think has gone really well. I was surprised with that trio and how they came to be, and I didn't really think it was going to work, but I think they all have similar mindsets, and they don't really mess too much in each other's business, so I think it works out really well. My hope is that Revival will take the belts. I just don't know right anymore with the tag teams, where it's going, who's leading it. It's not strong. Unfortunately, they just, especially on the SmackDown side, there just isn't enough. There's a lot more stronger tag teams on the Raw, but for whatever reason, they want to take four singles and put them in a match together, which I think is unfortunate. But, only time will tell, I guess. Once again, I hope the Revival comes out on top. It wouldn't shock me if the New Day, though, comes out with a win. Next we have, which I think will be on the pre-show, we have the triple threat match for the Cruiserweight Championship. I don't follow 205 Live. I just can't do it. Nothing against the wrestlers, just don't have the time. Drew Gulak is the champion, taking on Humberto Carrillo and Lince Dorado. I feel like Drew Gulak is going to keep the belt, only because, I don't know, he's named first on the list. I don't really have any other opinions on that one, unfortunately. I think the match will be a decent match, but it's not, I don't know. I just am waiting for this 205 Live to dissolve into NXT once they move to the USA Network for their two-hour shows. And then I think the Cruiserweight Championship will kind of dissolve as well. And they'll move on from there. Up next, we have the WWE Championship. Kofi Kingston defending against Randy Orton. As much as I am, I will say, not a huge Kofi Kingston fan. I know Mark and I disagreed on whether Kofi should be in the top five. I definitely don't think he should be, but that's my opinion. I think he'll beat Randy. I just can't see them giving Randy the numbers that he's going to be needing to in order to catch Triple H for the number of championships. And then obviously dealing with John Cena and Ric Flair. I just don't see Randy Orton up that level. So I think Kofi's going to retain, and maybe we'll see somebody else step in against Kofi and start a new storyline. Up next, we're going to go with the Raw Tag Team Championship. I have to say that, I voiced my displeasure in the last couple of weeks about why we have four single wrestlers competing for a tag team championship when we have very solid tag teams taking having matches and putting on good shows and in on Raw. And this is what we're dealing with. So I think Seth and Braun are going to retain. I really do. I think that Braun, the crowd loves Braun. The back end, you know, the back crew may not. But I can't see Dolph and Robert winning unless this match takes place before their championship match. And they start getting into a physical altercation. Then there might be an opportunity there for Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler to take it. But at some point in time, we got to get the belts back in some tag teams. Bayley and Charlotte will take on each other for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Unfortunately, while it was a great match between the four of them on SmackDown, Charlotte's back in a babyface role because Bayley's the bad one. I don't know how they're going to play this one. Charlotte being the champion, Bayley being the champion. I think it's six of one, half dozen of the other, given that the women's division on both fronts is lackluster right now in how they're pushing and how they're putting their stories together. So I think Bayley's going to retain. Does it really matter? Probably not. Charlotte's got to get back to being a heel. Just not sure how you're going to do that without ruining what they have going with Bayley. And last but not least, we have the WWE Universal Championship match. Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman. I think this is going to go to a no decision. I think that AJ Styles is going to come in and affect it. And then we'll go to a triple threat match at Hell in a Cell. Because you don't want either one of your top, right now, two of your top guys to be weaker. And so the best opportunity is to come to a draw and have somebody else impact it, and that way it doesn't impact anybody else negatively and so forth. So once again, this match is going to take place on Sunday, September 15th on the network. Sounds like a 7 p.m. start Eastern time, so pre-show will be at 6 p.m. Hopefully that means that we'll be out of there by 10:30. Some of us have to work in the morning and don't want to be up all night. So that being said, that wraps up the Clash of Champions preview. So before I go, I wanted to just talk about a couple of other things. One being an announcement from Impact, actually. Or rather, the company that owns Impact, Anthem, has purchased, I'm assuming, a majority stake in Access TV, AXS, which is owned by Mark Cuban. And oddly enough, Family Feud Steve Harvey. So I feel like this is a good opportunity for them to move, as they are still looking for a more permanent home What that's going to mean, though, for New Japan, because they use Access TV for people in the U.S. to watch New Japan, and I guess there's some other wrestling programs. Maybe they'll keep them. Maybe that means there's a partnership between Impact and New Japan. Who really knows? But I think it's a significant news in terms of the strength and growth for Impact, is they do need to find a permanent home. It would be nice if Canada, you know, the Canadian company, could have a better home than the Game Network or Game Show TV or whatever you want to call it, where we're stuck watching it in low def. We need some high def here so we can see our Canadian talent. And so hopefully this will all come together and we'll get a better home for Impact. Because I think it's a neat opportunity for Impact to really do something different than everybody else. And lastly, once again, C4 Undisputed Season 13 premiere coming Friday, September 20th. Next week, we'll break down the cards, so I don't want to go through it all right now. But we do have some debuts coming, which is always exciting. So next week, we will cover each one of those matches. There are still tickets for sale, so get them while you can. And as well, there is some information with regards to C4 Underground taking place at Beyond the Pale. It's coming in October the 11th, which is right before the Thanksgiving Day weekend. So I'm interested to see what happens there. Tickets are on sale. You can go to the C4 Facebook page and they have the link there. I think they're $20 a pop. Mark and I went to the last C4 Underground at the Algonquin Theater. So it was an interesting experience. Get a chance to see some of the up-and-coming talent, we'll call them, the lesser-known talents. And I think it's an opportunity to widen their audience. And so if you're interested, $20, pretty cheap for a couple of hours of entertainment. Don't forget to check that out. And that is it for me. I think I've talked enough by myself. I can finally breathe again. And sorry, just staring at somebody almost falling into the washing machine. So, after the break, Mark will be here to lay out his thoughts and opinions. So hang tight. Thanks very much for listening once again. My name is Kyle. And take it away, Mark. To make her dizzy, staring at these lines like, who the fuck is he? She hates when it comes up. She's always feeling dumb when they leave, and she's left with none. And her friends pretend that there might be one out there. She doesn't need it, she doesn't see it. She's defeated, she's defeated, deflated. L-O-V-E. What is going on, everyone? It's me, Mark. Kyle, thanks for kicking off the podcast today. Unfortunately, guys, I apologize once again. My schedule didn't line up last night, close to the last minute when Kyle and I were supposed to get together. We ended up not being able to, but one thing I love about this Anchor podcast application is it allows us to, you know, Kyle can record his end and then I can record my end and pop it in. So honestly, what I wanted to do, I know Kyle went over, you know, Clash of Champions, King of the Ring, a little bit of Raw and SmackDown, and I want to do the same to kind of give you guys my view and my take, but I want to do it in a little bit of more of a condensed, as I don't have too much time on my hands tonight, but I do want to go over it and let you guys know what I think. So what I decided to do was I'd love to go over the Clash of Champions, the 11 matches that are happening this coming Sunday night, as well as what I did, instead of reviewing Raw and SmackDown as a whole, is I kind of made my top 5 stories of the week. Shameless ripoff, Sam Roberts, if you listen to the Not Sam Wrestling podcast, also does the top 5 stories of the week. I find it very, very, I don't know, it's a great way to kind of measure the biggest things that go on, you know, this week on, you know, Raw and SmackDown. We can talk about things like Heavy Machinery taking on jobbers, but if you're watching your wrestling, you kind of saw that already. And it's not really too much to kind of, I don't know, spend too much time on. Especially with a squash match such as that. So kind of want to go over some just top areas and, of course, touch on the King of the Ring. We did determine this week what the finals of the King of the Ring are going to be. And a little twist, I don't know if I heard this right, but apparently all along the plan was to get the King of the Ring finals, which
spoiler alert, if you haven't been watching wrestling, is now Baron Corbin versus Chad Gable. I always thought it was going to be at the Clash of Champions pay-per-view, but apparently it's next week on Raw. Very interesting. I didn't know that was going to happen. I don't know what changed. Were we assuming it was going to be at Clash of Champions? But I don't know about you guys, but I thought it was all along. So, but we'll kind of get into it a little bit. But first, I want to kind of jump into my top five stories of the week in no very particular order, but I kind of put it in a little bit of an order. So number five, fifth story of the week, is ratings. I want to talk to you guys about ratings and kind of get your guys' take on things. Of course, one of the big news, big parts of news this week was Stone Cold returning to Madison Square Garden. And the day after Raw was done, everyone is jumping on board. Oh, you know, pretty good show, you know, lots of good wrestling, you know, great impact. Stone Cold was there, open and close. It was great, but they only got 2.1 million views. I remember, and here I'm going to be like when I was a kid, but I don't know. I don't know about you guys, but I try not to really think too much about views. Especially now that the NFL is back, Monday Night Football was on, and yes, it sounds like excuses, and we can make excuses all night and day, but I guess my message to you guys, to any fans, is don't worry about the ratings. WWE is doing fine. They're a very profitable company. They're not going anywhere. If anything, as we do know, especially coming up into the end of September, October, with the Fox deal, NXT going to the USA Network, lots of great change for WWE and very interesting change going into the end of 2019, early 2020. So, but I don't know. I feel that people can, like, even reading on Twitter and reading YouTube comments, and everyone's like, yeah, did you see, you know, Stone Cold, you know, like that stunner AJ Styles took, and Styles took it well. He kind of rolled up a little bit of the Rock, but not as dramatic, and, you know, a little bit of a beer bath, and, you know, the crowd was loving it. And oh my God, did you guys hear that Stone Cold shut the what chant up? He's the only man that can kind of command that respect and great things. And you saw these great comments, and, you know, especially while the event was going on. But then you see the day after, oh, 2.1 million views. That means the show was bad. Guys, back in the day, you know, yes, I know views were a lot different, but we can't necessarily depend everything on views. And here's why. 2.1 million views, and this is just my opinion, by the way. 2.5, 2.1 million views, that's not as much as they were getting way back in the Attitude Era. And, you know, we were talking about 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 million view shows on, you know, Raw and such. But you have to remember, we are in a new age, the age of the internet. I'll be the first to tell you, I don't watch WWE and SmackDown on cable. I don't know, and from the research that I've done, these ratings, it's specifically cable-driven. Nothing else. It doesn't take any consideration of Hulu, WWE Network, even though Raw and SmackDown go on weeks after. But it takes no consideration of any internet footprint. When you look at, you know, some of the number one, WWE itself has, you know, close to 50 million YouTube subscribers. And when you look at the amount of videos they pump out and the amount of views that some of these videos get, these little 3-minute snippets get millions and millions of views. People are watching, people are buying, people are ordering, people are subscribing. So I don't think we can define everything based off of a cable television number, because WWE is being watched by so much more. Yes, there's going to be a large portion out there that illegally stream, that they do not, you know, pay to watch, and WWE doesn't benefit in any way of them watching if you're watching a live ripped off stream or one of those sites that kind of uploaded afterwards. So that's where I kind of encourage people to, you know, let go of the ratings a little bit. Don't get me wrong, if all of a sudden WWE Raw dips, you know, under a million views, maybe we can start worrying, but WWE's okay. They're a very healthy company. Stock's doing well. Company's doing well. Don't worry about the views. Worry about the storylines, the characters, you know, cheering the good guys and booing the bad guys. And, you know, and I know everyone has their own approach to wrestling, but I just hope that you guys and everyone out there has more of an open mind, especially when it comes to the views. kind of ranted on the views a little bit there, guys. Sorry. I hope that made sense. I'd love to hear what you guys say. You know, hit me up at, tag me at MarkCote1209 or at 613 Wrestling on Twitter. All right, let's see here. Number four. This one's interesting. So the number four story of the week, Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. This storyline has been going on for a while, and I'm not hating it. For those of you who have been listening to the podcast for quite some time, you know I'm a big, big fan of storytelling, longevity in stories. And I feel that the Kevin Owens Shane, it's been a build. There's heightened, you know, WrestleMania was a big, you know, was a big up, you know, all throughout, you know, 2019. And it kind of has cooled down a little bit. And, you know, with Kevin Owens kind of walking on eggshells. But of course, this week, once again, spoiler if you haven't watched it on SmackDown, Elias, unfortunately, was unable to wrestle his match versus Chad Gable in the King of the Ring semifinals. Shane McMahon entered himself in against Chad Gable. Over the last couple of weeks, we've seen Kevin Owens kind of walk on eggshells and kind of, hey, you know, you're a father, you're a good father, I'm a father, I can't afford a $100,000 fine, I'm really, really sorry. You know, and he's been trying to, you know, play nice in the sandbox. And Shane kind of sees he's got Kevin Owens wrapped around his finger a little bit. And, but then he tells Kevin Owens, hey, you are going to be the special guest referee tonight in my match. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Help me win the match. So, you know, the match does happen. And, you know, Kevin does try his best, you know, to defer the chair. Chad Gable had that big moonsault that would have pinned Shane, and Kevin Owens with a really slow pin, kind of doing what Shane wants. But then Chad Gable gets him into a leg lock, an ankle lock, and Shane McMahon taps. Even without Kevin Owens doing anything or gesturing anything to the bellman, and the bellman knows, tapping out, the match is over. So the bell gets rung, Chad Gable's the winner. Shane kind of gets on the mic, also attacks Kevin Owens, but ultimately fires Kevin Owens. So the big question now, and the big question we have to ask all of ourselves, is where do we go from here? And I'll tell you, this is not necessarily a complete original idea. Once again, love my Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Sam had an interesting take on, and I wanted to share it with you guys in case you hadn't heard it, and definitely encourage you to go listen to this week's podcast. A very interesting note on, you know, maybe for Kevin Owens to make his way back up, he needs to start at the beginning. Maybe this is a great way of getting Kevin Owens back on NXT. You know, maybe, you know, you see Kevin Owens trying to beg for his job back, attend shows, and maybe it's, you know what, I've spoke to my brother-in-law, Triple H, and he'd love to have you in NXT. And then NXT comes, and Kevin Owens is like, oh, I love NXT. I was a champion. A lot of my friends are here. This is great. Maybe then to find out that he's not wrestling, he's maybe more of a backstage manager, maybe kind of cleaning up the locker rooms and helping the boys. Another great, interesting note that Sam said was, you know, obviously you can kind of break down the fourth wall a little bit and open up some kayfabe where there's a little bit of heat with Matt Riddle, apparently, and some other individuals. You could almost maybe bring that to light a little bit. Maybe Kevin Owens' mission is to straighten Matt Riddle out, and that leads to a match or a brawl. I think it would be great, number one, because ultimately it's never been done before. And I don't want it to ever think to utilize NXT as something so below. And because I don't think WWE would do that, seeing as how they're about to get a television deal for NXT. So they don't necessarily want to consider it lesser than anything specifically, even though they would when it comes to Raw or SmackDown. But I thought it was a very interesting take. You know, where does Kevin Owens go from here? Does he just go away for a while? Does he show up on Fox? Does he get his redemption somehow? Does someone give him his job back? Or does he really have to kind of make his way? I personally think it would be amazing to see Kevin Owens be sent back to NXT, get kind of griddled around for a little bit. But then the ultimate end is, whether it's within a short period of time or a couple of months, Kevin finally makes his way back to the main roster, you know, gets his opportunity against Shane and gets his redemption where, as we all want to see, ultimately Shane McMahon no longer on television. I don't know exactly all the details in inside and out. I think that's kind of the fun part to watch and maybe assume a little bit as we go. But yeah, what do you guys think? What do you guys think the story is going to go and what's next for Kevin Owens now that he's fired? I don't know. I think this could be a really interesting opportunity to do something a little unique. Interested to hear what you guys say. All right, the number three story of the week. This one I don't want to spend too much time on. However, I want to kind of bring it to light because there is still a lot of choppy, news articles. Like, I guess not everything has been defined, so I don't want to necessarily seem like I'm commenting on any one thing specific. But it was announced. What we do know is Impact Wrestling, Anthem owns Impact Wrestling. Anthem has a new owner. I can't remember the exact company name, but the person who owns that company is Dallas Mavericks owner, billionaire, Mark Cuban. Mark's, very invested into companies, he prides himself on being able to take companies and bring them from one level to the next. So it looks like that Impact Wrestling, even though they've kind of been on life support for quite some time, that they're going to get a little bit of a boost up, a little bit of financial backing, as you will. There is some details, apparently, where there's a small rumor that the new owners of Impact Wrestling want to buy a Ring of Honor and merge the companies together. There's also talk about how this company, now with the merger with Anthem and such, will actually now have rights to things like WOW, which is Women of Wrestling, some aspects of New Japan Wrestling, and also some of the Ring of Honor library. I know I didn't get a chance to listen to it all, but I definitely encourage you guys to go check out the YouTube channel Wrestle Talk News. This week they had a little bit of a couple of things talking about the rumors about Impact buying ROH. Ollie Davis goes into some really good detail about, a little bit of the detailed, kind of what the news has been saying about, and he tries to be very careful, as I'm trying to be now, where none of this is for certain, but it's very interesting to see where the future of Ring of Honor, Impact, Anthem, and especially when it comes to, Ring of Honor library and everything else, where's all this going to land? Is it going to be a merger? And if they do, who's going to be on top? Is it Impact or is it Ring of Honor? Who keeps that name? Personally, I hope it's Ring of Honor, because I think Ring of Honor has a heck of a lot more just name value than Impact. But once again, I wanted to kind of share that with you guys. I guess it's not necessarily a top story, but it was a very interesting story that I heard this week. Number two story of the week, King of the Ring. King of the Ring, of course, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen over a dozen individuals battle to make their way. We now know who the finals are going to be. Baron Corbin versus Chad Gable. It apparently is not going to be at Clash of Champions. It will be next week on Monday Night Raw to claim the 2019 King of the Ring. Number one, obviously, Kyle and I, we talked about it a couple weeks ago where after the first week of making predictions, we completely failed. We picked Drew McIntyre to win the whole thing. Drew was out a long time ago with the loss to Ricochet. But this week, we saw the triple threat match. Last week, Ricochet and Samoa Joe went to a little bit of a no contest. Due to the double pinning, referee indicated that Ricochet, Samoa Joe, and Baron Corbin will have a triple threat. And we saw that. I will tell you guys, I don't know what you guys thought about it, but really good triple threat match. Samoa Joe is a big man, a strong man. He's tough. Strong style is definitely in his arsenal. Baron Corbin, he's smooth. Like, that guy's gotten so much better, in the last little bit since he's been back from his small little hiatus. And Ricochet, that guy's all over the place. He's probably the most athletic guy in all of wrestling right now. But when it comes to a triple threat, sometimes it's really hard to pull it off. And I felt these three did a really, really good job pulling that off. They kept the pace going. All three of them were consistently involved. Submissions, maneuvers to get the pinfall, constant false finishes, but it was never overdone. And it was definitely in Baron Corbin's favor where Ricochet was about to get the win on Samoa Joe. Baron Corbin in heel fashion moves him out of the way, gets the pin on Joe, 1-2-3, Corbin wins. I can tell you guys, if you would have told me maybe a month ago that we were going to have Baron Corbin and Chad Gable, I don't know what I would have said to that. I might have been a little skeptic, but I'll tell you, I'm loving it. Baron Corbin, and I know if you hate him, he's doing his job. He's a heel. But like that, I know, I think I talked about it last week, but he had a recent podcast with Sam Roberts. I know I'm all over Sam Roberts this week, guys. Sorry. He had a podcast with Sam Roberts, which he really opened up. You know, Sam Roberts, when it comes to the interviews, Braun Strowman, Baron Corbin, really, really rock solid, you know, on the inside interviews that you don't hear from these guys often. Watching that interview, listening to that interview, you know, made me a much bigger Baron Corbin fan than I thought I'd ever be. But no, I think it's exciting, and especially to the setup of the King of the Ring finals, it's exactly what you want. It's a big heel and a big baby face. Baron Corbin has had many accolades, not necessarily in regards to, you know, championships, but wins, former general manager of Raw, you know, his win-loss record has been really, really good lately. And Chad Gable, where everyone kind of counted him out a while ago, you know, in and out of tag teams, American Alpha, moved out of that. You know, we saw him with Bobby Roode, saw him with Shelton Benjamin, and now he's kind of cut his hair and doing his own thing. There was rumor of him going to 205 Live, but number one, I've always been a huge Chad Gable fan, and I think this match is going to be awesome. Especially, I can kind of think maybe you're going to see King Corbin. I really hope he doesn't call himself King Corbin and wear everything. That gimmick has kind of been worn out a lot, but I don't know who's going to win, and I love that. I love the unpredictability of all of this. And how I have no idea who's going to win. So, no, but I'd love to hear from you guys as well. You know, what do you think of this finals? Baron Corbin versus Chad Gable. Did you think it was, you know, if you booked it differently, what would have you booked it? I know we originally talked about how, you know, it was going to be Drew and Ali at the end. And obviously it didn't go that way. But no, hey. And plus, very interesting. You know, Chad Gable kind of was opportunistic in all of this because Ali, very hot before WrestleMania. He got injured. Kofi took his spot. And Kofi is now the champ for the last several months. Buddy Murphy, also in the King of the Ring. You know, huge upside. You know, defeating Daniel Bryan a couple weeks ago. But now Ali, Murphy, all these people are out. And Gable's in. You know, it makes me really happy because Chad Gable's a, you know, like a dark horse in the locker room where that guy is probably the closest thing to a Kurt Angle than you're going to get. But it's not Kurt Angle, it's Chad Gable. But congrats, Chad. That's awesome. And then my top story, and I will cheat. I do have a couple of honorable mention stories on the side. But the top story of the week, number one, biggest thing for me was Stone Cold Steve Austin's return to Madison Square Garden. I loved it. I popped. You know, it's funny, people that I know that have not watched wrestling as long as I have or thoroughly through the Attitude Era and over the last, you know, 25 plus years, you know, they were kind of like, oh, a Stone Cold, yes, we get you're a legend. I loved it. And I saw a lot of people online loved it too. It was great. It was one of those contract signings that actually worked. Even though, yes, contract signing, you know, crap talk, all went to hell, turned into a fight, turned into a Stone Cold Stunner with AJ Styles. But I thought that was great, and especially, too, just how Stone Cold commanded respect, you know, just by his presence. Braun comes in, Braun puts his hand out, Stone Cold just kind of keeps staring at him, then announces Seth Rollins, then shakes both of their hands. You know, especially at that one point where they're trying to what Stone Cold, he's talking, and they're what? And then he literally just shut it down, and they listened. They were like, okay, nope, that's the one man that can shut down the what chant. But no, I thought it was great, and especially too, the reason why, you know, he was so high on my list this week is I've been following Stone Cold for a very long time, you know, 20 years plus. Not just his career, but outside of his career. And if you don't listen to the Stone Cold podcast, number one, you guys are missing out. Honestly, truly, you're missing out. Great, great interviews, great stories. Some interviews with some current top talent, some, you know, and it's what I love about it the most is you hear the passion in Steve Austin's voice. Recently, this week, he actually just had The Big Show on. The Big Show was on promoting his upcoming Netflix show, The Big Show Show. And just talking about the road, talking about the old times, talking about booking, storytelling, and Stone Cold just getting so lit up and excited. I almost feel that, seeing as how much, and yes, everyone is like, oh, Stone Cold's here because WWE needs him. They need a rating. guys, I act just listening to Steve Austin talk, I think Stone Cold's here because he misses wrestling. I think Stone Cold's here because he has a lot to offer. You know, he's not doing anything too much. He couldn't be, you know, he's not too big into the movie scene, number one, because, and he talks about it on this podcast, he's been offered some cool roles, but it's just not him. He loves telling a story. He loves pro wrestling. And I think he's trying to maybe offer something. Does this mean Stone Cold's going to be back full time, NXT, in the back of WWE? Who knows? You know, time will only tell, but the fact that the Rattlesnake is here and we're hearing him talk passionately about professional wrestling, not just in the ring but outside of the ring, makes me excited because I was a huge Stone Cold mark growing up. All right, so that is my top five stories of the week. Couple of small honorable mentions. Number one, and me and Kyle will talk about it when there is more information. There's talk about merging 205 Live with NXT. I know we talked about that a little bit ago, but apparently there are some more rumors how they want to view 205 Live, NXT, and NXT UK kind of under the same umbrella to be able to kind of share the same talent pool. We'll get more information on that. Of course, as well, recently, it's been, I don't want to say announced because it hasn't been announced, but there has been huge speculation that starting in Fox or in the near future, WWE is going to be moving to a two-man booth, two-man commentary team, you know, a play-by-play and a color commentary, a color commentator. I don't know exactly more details. Who would it be? Where would it be? What shows are they? But I think that works. And that piece of news transitions to my last piece of story of the week. If you haven't seen it, it's online. I'm not going to go beat by beat, but Cody Rhodes had a little interview with Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone, of course, recently signing with AEW. And the big question is, and Cody asked, and it was really funny, are you going to be commentating for AEW? And then Tony kind of looks at him going, I don't know. You're the boss. Why don't you tell me? Cody kind of looks at the camera and gives a couple winks. So that kind of maybe helps the speculation where Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone may be either a two-man booth or two of a three-man booth for AEW. You know, Kyle and I was talking, you know, off podcast last week in regards to how would that work? You know, they're both very similar in their approach. Who would do play-by-play? Who would do color? You know, do they let them both do one and then they get someone else in, like Excalibur for another? Who knows? All I'm saying is that if Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross can get together and they can make some great matches and tell some great stories. You know, I don't need to necessarily wait and see to see if that'll happen. They are two very much two veterans and pros and very close friends that they would find a way to make it work and tell a good story. So, man, yeah, that's all the stories of the week for me, guys. You know, right about now, last thing I want to get into is the Clash of Champions. Right about now would be where I would take a quick break, but for some reason, my Anchor podcast is frozen. Yes, it's frozen. We're going to continue. Hopefully this is still recording. Thank you for sticking with us. But no, quickly, guys, you know, there's 11 matches this coming Sunday at Clash of Champions. Clash of Champions, of course, famously known for its time, the title of this pay-per-view, known for its time in WCW, Clash of Champions. Clash of Champions go far as back into the 80s, so it's definitely a pay-per-view title that's been around for a long time. WWE has crowned it where essentially all titles are up for grabs and any storylines are continued. So we'll kind of go through them. From bottom to top, no specific order. This is the order that WWE.com has it at. I'm assuming that the first match of the night will probably be on the pre-show, which is Drew Gulak versus Humberto versus... Hold on, is that a triple threat? Please hold. Let's see here. WWE.com... Yes, I'm using cookies. Wow, WWE.com's got a lot of pop-ups now. That's crazy. Using cookies. Want to do here. Want to go to the shop. No, I don't want to go to the shop. Here we go. Clash of Champions. And the reason why I want to check is, I'm not going to lie, guys, the individuals that are in this match, I'm not overly familiar with. Here we go. The WWE Cruiserweight Championship will be defended. So Drew Gulak, the champion, will go against Humberto Carrillo, also versus Lince Dorado. Not very overly familiar with Humberto and Lince. Those sound like luchador names. I'm not going to lie, guys. I've been a little back on my 205 Live. Haven't watched it much lately. But hey, you know, it's someone new. It's something a little different. Seemingly, if you look at where the Cruiserweight Championship picture was a year ago to now, not only has it been, several champions, which that's kind of a story of itself and their consistency of champion holding the belt, but lots of different challengers. Humberto and Lince, definitely new. I don't know. Drew Gulak, love him. I don't know. I guess because I don't know two out of the three individuals very well, it's really hard for me to get excited for that match. But if I had to make a prediction, Drew Gulak will retain. I'm gonna keep it here so next week we can go over our results. Next up, I'm sure there's going to be another match on the pre-show, but it doesn't actually show which ones will be. But based off the card here, AJ Styles will defend his United States Championship against Cedric Alexander. So this has kind of been a quick rise for Cedric in a short period of time. You know, we kind of saw this in Ricochet a little bit, and, you know, where Ricochet and AJ, and even now they're kind of going back and forth, and they're definitely pushing Cedric Alexander since being, you know, drafted onto the main roster. However, is it time for Cedric to be a champion? I don't think so, and that's not a bad thing. I just think we have to stop thinking, and I guess by we, you know, us, WWE or whatnot, but more so us, that, you know, like, oh, he's hot, he's new, you know, put a belt on him. You know, I remember back in the day, some of the biggest legends didn't win their first world championship or a championship many years into the business. It's like Shawn Michaels. I believe I remember seeing Shawn Michaels in a WWE ring in the mid-1980s, and he only became the WWE champion for the first time in 1996. So 10 years later, yes, he had been a quote-unquote unofficial tag team champion as a rocker with Marty Jannetty when they beat the Hart Foundation unofficially in a taping. And he was also an Intercontinental champion throughout the way. That's one of many different examples I could give, but I just feel if you have something in Cedric, build him, include him, you know, grow something. You know, it doesn't need to be now. And if it is, hey, okay, where are you going to go from here if he's the new U.S. champion? You know, if anything, I would like to say if Cedric's the new United States champion, it's simply just to take it off of Styles. I don't know. But no, I just don't think it's ready yet. If someone's going to take the belt off of Styles, let it be someone else. Let it be maybe a Ricochet or a Joe or someone like that. Just not Cedric yet. And I think he's just, you know, still very green. And if anything, it's, even though he's put a lot of time in, we're still in a main roster aspect. We're still very new to Cedric Alexander. So let us kind of take him in a little bit. And don't get me wrong, as a first championship, the United States title is not the worst one to give him. It's not like we're talking about the WWE or the Universal Championship at all, but that's just my take. And then, of course, we have the Intercontinental Championship match. The champion, Shinsuke Nakamura, defending against the former 9-time Intercontinental Champion, The Miz. Of course, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen The Miz, kind of go back and forth with Sami Zayn. Shinsuke now has Sami Zayn as his voice, which I think is pretty cool. Because if Sami can do anything, it's talk, which is pretty neat. In regards to winner, this one I have to kind of categorize in two places. There's what I think will happen and what I hope happens. Or sorry, what I think will happen and what I want to happen. What I want to happen, I want The Miz to be an Intercontinental Champion again. Heck, I want The Miz to be the WWE Champion. At the same time, Shinsuke hasn't really been doing much lately. And yes, maybe that's the answer to say, well, take the belt off him then, if he's doing nothing with it. Or maybe is this your time to brighten him up a little bit more. Shine Nakamura up. Yes, it does risk hurting the Intercontinental Championship, as the last couple of months, the Intercontinental Championship has kind of been, you know, a little dry lately, with Shinsuke holding it for a while. If anything, I would love to see, like, I kind of close my eyes and think, you know, Ricochet, Baron Corbin, Samoa Joe for the Intercontinental Championship. Those are your people, because those are your future champions one day, whether you like it or not. So, and that's in, like I've said before, guys, that's my big mantra on the Intercontinental Championship, is that whoever should be wrestling for it or holding it should be people who at one point soon in the near future, whether it's that year, a year from now, or 2 years from now, could be a WWE champion. And then same thing with the United States, you know, and such. But yeah, I'd love to see The Miz win. I think The Miz brings so much credit and so much respect and history to the Intercontinental Championship. But at the same time, if done right, maybe Shinsuke can, you know, maybe the title can help Shinsuke a little bit, you know, and especially with Sammy and The Miz. And The Miz does a really good job of making people look good, so we'll see. Next up, we do have the SmackDown Tag Team Championships being defended. Big E and Xavier Woods of The New Day versus Revival. This one, don't get me wrong, it's going to be great. Big E, Xavier, they're great. The Revival, one of the best tag teams. At the same time, you know, and I know they're talking about doing another draft for the brand split to make it more official. And this is a good example of the brand split being completely just kind of thrown away. The Revival are a Raw tag team, and they're going against the SmackDown tag team champions. Does this mean that in the time being, if Revival wins, they're going to be on SmackDown now? You know what I mean? Like, that kind of throws me off for a little bit. If anything, play with that. A SmackDown team is challenging, a Raw team is challenging a SmackDown team. You know, like, say it, like, bring it up, bring it, like, rise it from the sand and be like, hey, if the Revival wins, the Revival is now on SmackDown solely. And Big E and Xavier, you are on Raw. But here's the thing, Kofi, you're on SmackDown still. You're kind of our SmackDown world champion, not the Universal champion. So maybe that brings a little bit more drama to it where, whoa, the New Day's a team. It's Kofi, Xavier, and Big E. But if Big E and Xavier lose, they go to Raw. Kofi's not on Raw, even though you see Kofi on Raw every now and then. But you know what I mean, brand split-wise. I thought that might have been a little bit of a cooler way to approach it, but instead I think we're just going to get a cool match out of it. But I would say, if anything, just for consistency, New Day wins. So New Day, Nakamura, AJ Styles, Drew Gulak. Forgot to make my little notes here. All right, up next, we do have the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships on the line. Individuals who have done a really good job at being champions, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, will defend against Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Regardless of how good people might think, you know, Mandy's getting better, Sonya's, you know, very good. But Mandy and Sonya are as legitimate as a tag team as they come. They've been together for a long, long time. So this kind of makes sense. One thing that doesn't make sense to me is the women's tag team division. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, please. 613 Wrestling on Twitter, Instagram, wherever. DM us or just add us. I don't think the only time we see a women's division match is when the championships are being defended. Outside of that, we don't really ever see, you know, two tag teams, two female tag teams against each other that are in relation to the tag team division. Yes, we can say we saw Bayley and Sasha versus Becky and Charlotte, but that was because those are like the challengers and champions versus challenger and champions. That had nothing to do with the women's tag team division. So, but yeah, I think that's, if anything, they've got really good champions in Alexa and Nikki, but I just think you need to heighten. Not a week should go by without a tag team match occurring, whether it's Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville versus Kairi Sane and Asuka. You know, it's like, give us, when we see those matches, because there are some tag teams there now. Bayley and Sasha are kind of, you know, best heelies again. You know, the Iconics, Mandy and Sonya, Kairi and Asuka, you know, and Alexa and Nikki. But we never see any match that has a contention to build in the women's tag team division. I know I'm ranting now, but hope you guys know what I mean. I'd love to see that more. If anything, Alexa and Nikki have been too strong, in my opinion. I feel that they will overcome and they will defeat Mandy and Sonya. Next up, of course, pulling two shifts that night. Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman will defend their Raw Tag Team Championships against Ziggler and Rude. Ziggler and Rude ran the gauntlet, or the turmoil match, the other week to determine or to get this opportunity. So, very interesting. What's going to happen here? You know, are Seth and Braun going to go into the main event facing each other as Tag Team Champions? I don't think so. I personally think that Ziggler and Rude will win. I think Ziggler and Rude have been working as a heel tag team. And the main reason upon anything else, it's not so much that Ziggler and Rude do well together. It's more Seth and Braun. You know, it's just after the main event, let's just say Seth retains or Braun beats him. And then the next night on Raw, they're all holding titles still. Because no matter what, if they retain, if Seth and Braun retain the next night on Raw, the two of them are still, you know, one of the two of them are still dual champions and one of them's a champion. So I don't know if I'm digging that. I think separate championships, it's fun while it lasts. I think Ziggler and Rude could hopefully maybe kick up the tag team division a little bit more. Two very, very, very good in-ring workers with Rude and Ziggler. So I'm going to call Ziggler and Rude for the win. Next up, we have Bayley defending her SmackDown Women's Championship against Charlotte. Very interesting. You know, outside of how Bayley has been handling herself, it took a really big turn within the last week with Bayley turning heel and joining her, you know, best friend Sasha, who's also a heel, going up against, you know, one of their fellow four horsewomen, Charlotte. Charlotte, hands down, as we know, is probably the biggest threat to Bayley right now, as she's a numerous time champion, but as well, just a hell of a competitor. She can win, beat anyone at any given night. Interesting curve, and here's now where I'm also going to just, I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to pop up to the, looks like the co-main event, Becky and Sasha. Becky and Sasha, of course. Now, Becky, Sasha, Bayley, Charlotte, four horsewomen. Bayley, Sasha, best friends, heels. Bayley, champion. Sasha going for the championship. I'm going to call Bayley to retain against Charlotte. And I'm going to call Sasha to win against Becky. Not saying that Becky couldn't get it back in the near future, maybe at a Survivor Series or such. But just think, week after week, Bayley and Sasha, best friends, heels, both champions. Raw and SmackDown Women's Champions. What a moment for the both of them, but also the clout. Think of the clout. Think of the Raw just in your face, putting it in everyone's face. We are the champions. We were the people you guys were counting out. You know, we went from tag team champions to both champions. I think that would be great for storytelling. What's good about it is that, you know, Bayley keeping it and doesn't hurt Charlotte, and Becky losing it doesn't really hurt Becky. Becky's held it for a really long time since Mania. And if anything, I think, you know, seeing Becky be able to chase again against Sasha will be fun. So yeah, Bayley to retain and Sasha for the win. All right, three more matches left. We do have Roman Reigns versus Rowan in a no disqualification match. For those of you who have been keeping up, I'm not going to go too deep into it. But of course, Roman had a bad couple of weeks, you know, trying to get killed, barricades falling on him, jumping out of the way of a car while his car gets hit, and ends up being an imposter, ends up being Rowan. Daniel Bryant kind of smacks Rowan, telling him to get out of here, you lied to me. Looks like it was going to be a build to Daniel Bryant, Roman Reigns. But as we're seeing, even Rowan laid out Daniel Bryant last week. So, this is the big match where it's going to answer a lot of questions. Is Daniel Bryant going to get into all of this? And is Daniel turning face? Or was this the plan all along? And this is the end game, where Daniel comes in, you know, helps Rowan win, but attacks Roman, and it's kind of like it was me all along. You know, like we put all this together, you know, it was my way to get to you. It was my way to screw with you, you know, so I kind of think Rowan will win based off of help of Daniel Bryant. Because it was me all along. It was me all along, Austin. Me all along. There we go. And then Rowan will grab the mic and go, because I did it for Daniel Bryant. All right. Last two matches. World title matches. Kofi Kingston versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. So this one I love. It's a good opportunity to redeem from what ended up happening at SummerSlam, where it was a good match that turned into a disqualification and a freakout from Kofi's end, deservingly so. Kofi's held the championship since WrestleMania. He's been a strong champion. Lots of history over the last 10 years with these individuals. WWE has done a fantastic job at packaging this and bringing it to light, where Orton didn't give Kofi the time of day 10 years ago, you know, and kind of held him down. This is Kofi's chance and Kofi's turn to show that I'm the champion now. I'm the man. Here's what I think's going to happen. I think Orton's going to beat him. I think Randy Orton is going to be the new WWE champion. If anything, it would kind of make sense where Kofi's kind of gotten the upper hand. He got the upper hand just this past couple of days on SmackDown. He's gotten the upper hand, you know, at SummerSlam. You know, as much as Orton has kind of, talked about how stupid he is and has been in his face, Kofi's always gotten the upper hand. So I think Orton's going to walk away with the victory. Exactly how it's going to happen, I'm not too sure. I'm going to kind of leave it to the imagination and the surprise. But if anything, I think, once again, just like Becky, short period of time, continue the build, Survivor Series, Kofi wins it back from Orton. You know, because I definitely think it's important to not just be one and done with Kofi. And then next, of course, the big one, Seth frickin' Rollins. Against Braun Strowman, the Monster Among Men, for the WWE Universal Championship. This one's crazy. You know, I don't know where this is going to go. You know, this one kind of tugs back and forth for me where, you know, is it time for Braun? You know, he's kind of has he put in enough time? You know, is this the time that he's been waiting for and the back has been waiting for? You know, if he does win, it's easy to look at Seth and go, you know, Seth doesn't seem to be able to hold on to the championship very long. He tends to lose it and, you know, on and off. So I don't know. I really don't know where this one's going to go. But if I had to make a prediction, I think that night you're going to see a new Universal Champion. I think Braun Strowman is going to get it. But I only think it's going to be for a hot minute. I don't think it's going to be for a long time. I truly, honestly don't. I think you're going to see it continued. Seth is going to chase, and he's going to get it back eventually. Or maybe I'm completely wrong, and Braun Strowman absolutely tears through everyone and holds on to that championship for the next 15 years. Who knows? Anything can be possible with Braun Strowman. But no, I think, yeah, you know what? Like, we've seen the Brock, Roman, Seth, you know, over and over again over the last couple of years. Let's see something new, you know, like let's see something new for the Universal Championship specifically. And I think Braun Strowman is something new. Braun Strowman can be something to kick off, you know, the end of 2019. I don't know. I just think it's interesting. I think we've all kind of asked ourselves, how would he be as a champion? What would he do? How would he act? But yeah, so what do you guys think? That's it for me. It's Clash of Champions. It's top five stories of the week with a couple of little dusted extras on there. But once again, thank you guys for, you know, all the support you guys give us each and every week on the podcast. Kyle and I absolutely appreciate it. We love you guys. We do this for you because we love talking about wrestling and we love hearing what you guys see and think about the product. Not, I know we talk WWE heavy, but let us know what you guys think in general about anything and everything. But that's it for me, folks. My name is Mark from 613 Wrestling Podcast. Calling it a good night, and I will see you next week. Kyle and I should be getting together next Wednesday or Thursday next week. So we'll be together in the same room, and we will go over the results of Clash of Champions and also any other new news that might come up with some of the top stories we talked about tonight. Have a good night, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
613 Wrestling.